This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, wipe the fog off language's glasses. In today's episode, for Halloween, we get into the etymologies of some scary words. But before that, an announcement. The Allusionist has left the Radiotopia network of podcasts. I've written a statement with my reasons for leaving at theallusionist.org/leaving-radiotopia. And I'd like you to read it, because it's about stuff that goes way beyond Radiotopia and the responsibilities as a white person in organisations that are not inclusive. I'll always be grateful to Radiotopia for giving me the opportunity to make this show, and I hope for many excellent things in the network's future. The Allusionist is going to be independent for the next while, and if you happen to have the inclination and spare cash to support it, head on over to patreon.com/allusionist, and if not, no problem, the podcast will always be free. Content note, this episode contains some sex words and references. On with the show. Horror was just a feeling of disgust or dread. But it's like, if you go back right to its root, it's to bristle. So it's just that sensation of like your hair's standing on end. Horror.
It's funny because I've heard of people where their hair stands on end for good things.
Yeah.
Someone once told me he knew this was the woman of his dreams. His hair on his arm stood on edge.
Hmm.
And I remember joking at the time, I'm like, that's how I knew who not to date. And I remember him not laughing. Because he was being very earnest about it. But I guess horror would have been the wrong word to use at that time.
Yeah, I get that when I hear brass bands and choirs. Not fear, but just the hair on my arm standing on end.
Yeah, yeah. That's I get that too, in a good way. Hi, my name is Paul Bay. I'm known for several things, including podcasting, TV development, and one book. But this is Halloween, so you might know me as the co-creator of the podcast, The Black Tapes. Ooh, scary.
And The Big Loop, sometimes scary.
And The Big Loop, which is scary sometimes.
As a former preacher, Paul, did you use words to strike fear into the souls of your congregation?
Yes, yes.
Give us some tips.
Whenever you're telling scary stories or even existentially scary stories, it's always good to use lots of adjectives and adverbs. That is the secret.
Really?
Yes, that is the secret.
As a sub-editor, I'm trying to get people away from that.
It's so simple. It's just a blood-curdling scream, a formidable shadow, a daunting staircase, and an appalling smell. You know, I don't know why smell came into it.
Well, can be scary.
That's all it took. And oh, wait, and then remind them of hell once in a while, so they'll come back next week for the next installment of Why You Should Come Here and Give a Weekly Monetary Sum.
I put to Paul the etymologies of some non-adverb scary words. I learned that the word nightmare, around 700 years ago, meant an evil female spirit who would make men or horses feel in their sleep like they were being suffocated.
Men and horses?
Yeah, men and horses.
This has got to be Northern Europe then. Is that the origin of the word?
I believe so.
It's got to be. There's not a lot of men and horses in Korean etymology.
So I thought it was interesting that a nightmare was a kind of goblin and nothing to do with horses.
Not at all.
No, the mare in it was just an old English word for an incubus or a monster.
Oh, so that's the mare is incubus. Okay, I got to remember that. That's a good story item to file away.
I also didn't actually know what succubus and incubus meant either. And succubus is a female demon that has sex with men when they sleep. And incubus is a male demon that has sex with women when they sleep. And succubus means like something like to lie underneath.
Yes.
So these are female demons in non-dominant sexual positions.
That sounds familiar only because one teacher made me look at old Dutch paintings, and I swear to God, that kind of imagery was in some of them. I'm not versed or smart enough to tell you which ones or who it was, but I swear that this sounds very familiar.
Oh, and also apparently having sex with the demon was like having sex with a cavern of ice. I have to wonder how they found that out. Around 700 years ago, the word haunt first appeared in written English, but it didn't have the sense of a ghost frequenting a place until a couple of hundred years later.
It just meant that way where someone haunts a bar, as in they go to it a lot, but they're not an actual ghost. But it also meant to have sex with, and I could not do enough Googling safely to find out why it had that sense, because it just came up with a lot of websites about people having sex with ghosts. So I cannot find the etymology of this Middle English use of haunt in the sexual sense.
You've just screwed up your Google Ads logarithm by looking up succubus, haunting, why sex, haunting.
The things I do for this show.
Exactly.
Bugbear, boggart, bogeyman, bugaboo, bog or bug turns up quite a bit in scary words. A few hundred years ago, as a word on its own, it meant a scary thing. But the origin of that is not known. There are theories that the bog or bug was a goat or a scarecrow. Not really interchangeable, are they, goats and scarecrows? Maybe they were then.
When you were little, did your parents introduce the concept of boogeyman to you? Anything like that?
No, there were these stupid, I shouldn't say stupid because I don't know how culturally ingrained they are, but it's to me, there were silly little superstitions, like just to get me to behave. Like a lot of Korean kids are told, mm-hmm. Don't fidget with your leg. Like don't, in your chair, don't fidget or you'll end up poor. And I'm like, huh? And apparently it's like, you know, all the change will fall out of your pocket. That's the mythology.
Oh, that's quite practical.
Yeah.
I get it.
I don't know how far back this goes. A lot of my Korean friends grew up with that same thing. You know, don't aim the fan. This is a very popular one in Korea. Don't aim the fan at your face when you go to sleep. You won't wake up. You'll die. And it's fan death.
Wow.
Every Korean grew up with that from their grandmothers or their parents. I remember challenging my mom on that. I go, hey, mom, remember you used to tell me all the time? Well, the other day, I just slept all night with a fan in my face. And here I am. Science, mom. Science.
How did that go down?
She laughed. She goes, I know. We just did that. So we're not sure why we did that.
Just because you can. I suppose you're just passing down the mess from generation to generation.
Yeah, or just get me used to the bullshit of stories that they're like, one of them's going to stop me from getting into trouble. Another one's going to make me study harder. Another one, you know, just inundate me with a fear of being poor, a fear of not being successful, and you grow a healthy, happy child that way.
Who wants one of those? You just want one that doesn't trust anyone because of the torrent of lies served by the adults.
Exactly. Yeah, my mom just gave me a healthy fear of strangers. That was it. Every time someone knocked on the door, it's like, no, don't answer. It's a bad person. And what she meant was someone trying to collect rent.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it was one of those situations.
It was the boogeyman that is capitalism.
Exactly.
A bugbear was a demon in the form of a bear that ate children.
That's where it comes from?
And yet teddy bears are everywhere. What are people trying to say to kids? And lemur, as in the animal, is from the Roman mythology lemures, which were evil spirits of the dead.
Cute lemurs are from that?
Yes. Someone who was cataloguing lemurs in the museum of King Adolf Frederick of Sweden decided to call them lemurs because they go around at night with a slow pace. And maybe that reminded him of the spirits of the dead?
I don't like it when people who are scared of weird things are given so much authority to be able to name stuff.
Speed up or you're evil.
Yeah. That's a bad name then. Lemurs are cute.
It seems unfair. They are cute. They're just slow mammals. Leave them be. They're not vengeful spirits that have not been given proper funeral rites. And then there are a couple of substances that have demonic names, like cobalt. The metal cobalt is from the German kobold, which was a household goblin. And because cobalt had arsenic and sulfur in it, and therefore made cobalt miners very ill, they were like, well, it must be a demon. That's why we're ill, because of the demons in the mines.
Okay, that one is I'll accept that one. I will like that they've had to put some thought into it. It's not some weird superstition. They saw people getting sick. That one I'll let slide. Not the other ones, though.
Sure. Yeah, it's scientific.
Yeah, exactly.
And then nickel as well was from the word Kupfernickel, which meant copper demon. And the miners called nickel that because it looked like copper, but didn't have any copper in it and therefore is demonic, I guess. Can you argue with that? No. Science.
It would have been easier to name stuff that wasn't demonic back then.
Well, now, if we're talking about demons, get ready.
I'm Chelsea Weber-Smith. I host a podcast called American Hysteria that covers American moral panics, conspiracy theories, and fantastical thinking, and we analyze how that affects our psychology and culture.
Have you noticed any words that you think particularly are likely to stoke fear?
I have. I think, and I think this is true for the UK and maybe globally, is that word, Satan.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that that's a kind of a misunderstood word, but you can apply it to so many things that are happening now with, I mean, even Donald Trump was asked whether or not there is a satanic cult in our government, and he refused to respond to that. And so this word that has been evoked in the 1980s in this very severe way is really coming back, but it has such obviously ancient origins, and it's been used in so many different ways against so many different groups.
Yeah, and I was surprised that it didn't really have particularly negative origins for a really long time.
Yeah.
Or at least not specific origins, like it didn't specifically mean what we take it to mean now as in the devil.
Right.
For ages.
It's interesting because in the Bible, Satan can mean kind of two different things. There is the character of Satan, but also very often Satan is not a singular person, but rather a descriptor. Like you would call someone a Satan. Mm-hmm. And that word is translated roughly to one who throws something across one's path, which is great, right? It's so much nicer. It sort of, it takes away some of the fire and brimstone of it and shows that these things will kind of cross our path and we have to deal with them and try to figure out how to do that in the best way that harms the least amount of people and harms us the least.
I really think I'm my own Satan by that definition.
I sure throw some stuff across my path.
Yeah, I mean, literally, because I'm untidy, but also in life.
Emotionally.
So I guess then Satan was sort of a genre of beings rather than one particular being.
That's right, that's right. And again, a lot of times it is this creature, this Antichrist-type character, but not always. And I think that that's really interesting, and I think that it makes things just a little less scary, and yet we certainly don't have that idea when we conjure Satan in our head, especially I think in America. Satan is so many things and can be applied to so many different people, because we also have that word satanic, right? And when something's satanic, it takes on the characteristics of the Satan, but not in the way that its original meaning might denote.
Yeah, because satanic suggests malevolence, but the original Satan meaning seems more like obstacles.
Obstacles and almost like heed this warning. Here are ways to avoid things that are going to take away from your individual spirituality and kind of set you on that path toward destruction or whatever you want to call it.
The etymology of Satan just means an adversary, mm-hmm. or one who plots against another, which I suppose has the intent of someone who is trying to cause you damage of some kind.
Yeah. And for example, when the colonists came over into America and were met with these indigenous tribes, they needed a way to dehumanize, as we do again and again with any oppressed group in our culture. And one way that they did that was call them agents of Satan. And it happened again during slavery, slave revolts. The enslaved people were often referred to as satanic. And then you hear it now with feminists. And anyone sort of pushing against the status quo can be turned into a satanic agent. And it's just a really useful way to create a villain, an adversary from someone that you actually need to oppress to meet your own selfish ends, right? So we turn the victims into evil forces so we can kind of justify any actions we want to take against them.
Ah, satanic victim blaming.
It's the name of my band.
In the Hebrew Bible, the word Satan doesn't appear that much, only 10 times, and most of it is just quite literally an adversary, so someone that they were fighting against, like military adversaries or within legal proceedings. And then there are very few instances which are angels carrying out tasks of God, because the God of the Hebrew Bible is often angry. So I guess those Satan angels were doing things that would be considered quite negative, but with the command of the big lad.
Yeah. The God of the Old Testament was a scary dude.
The word devil you can trace back to the ancient Greek verb to slander, diabolein, which literally meant to throw across. Again, like Satan, the slander and the throwing. Demon, meanwhile, derives from a Greek word for a spirit or lesser god, but if you go right back to its Proto-Indo-European root, it meant divider.
I guess, you know, a demon being a divider is not unlike someone who throws something across one's path, right? It's something that's dividing you away from whatever your true purpose is or your true self.
So if demon was a divider, I wonder if that was dividing your spirit so it was incomplete for divine recognition or something after your death.
I think that's probably right.
Now, for a bit of Halloween mischief, I object usually to false etymologies, but shall we try and get people to believe that Jack O'Lantern is an eponym? It's named after someone called Jack O'Lantern.
Yeah, that's we can get people to believe that.
Just had a very bright smile that looked like fire.
Do you want to hear about Jack O'Lantern?
I would adore it.
So the story also involves this guy named Jack, who's sometimes called Drunk Jack. And it's the story of a man who tricks the devil out of stealing his soul. So he's too wicked to be led into heaven, and he goes down to hell, but the devil's so pissed off that he was tricked that he sends him back to where he came from.
Wow.
And the man is like in the bog in the darkness, and he asks for some light. So as a little tiny mercy, the devil, interestingly, is the one who shows him mercy, throws him a coal, and the man places it in a turnip. And thus, the jack-o'-lantern is invented by Drunk Jack.
Wow. I don't know if I was drunk whether I'd have the presence of mind to put a burning coal into something so that I didn't burn myself on it anymore.
You know?
Or that I would hollow out a turnip quickly enough to perform the task.
I think it speaks to Jack's credit.
Do you think that that is the way to achieve eternal life? Just being too annoying even to be in hell?
Probably. That's what I'm going for.
Then maybe you just get into purgatory.
Just throw me a coal, baby. I'm good.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is a neuromancy, noun, the interpretation of dreams in order to foretell the future. Oh great, my future involves being chased until I fall down some stairs? Try using a neuromancy in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. The music is by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com. Thanks to Lauren Passel of Podcast The Newsletter. You heard from Chelsea Weber-Smith. They host the podcast American Hysteria, about conspiracy theories and moral panics, and a new season just began, with episodes about true crime and killer clowns. So check out American Hysteria in the pod places. While you're there, you can also get Paul Bay's podcast, The Black Tapes and The Big Loop, and he has a new book out, a memoir of when he used to be a teacher. It's called You Suck, Sir. Seek out Allusionist Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Hang out at patreon.com/allusionist. And to hear or read every episode, find out more information about the topics therein, get links to all the guests, see the full dictionary entry for the randomly selected word, visit the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.
By the way, your listeners are not going to know this, but we're Skyping on video right now, and over your left shoulder, there's this creepy jacket hanging there. Like, but it's not hanging like a jacket. The shoulders are given form. It's like a headless person with his back to me.
It is a headless monk.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
For the atmosphere, Paul.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.